What happened next was not clear to Dr. Stadler, because his mind refused to admit the reality of the things he was seeing. There were shifting figures in half-lighted, disordered offices. There were too many firearms on everybody's hips. There were senseless questions asked of him by jerky voices that alternated between impertinence and fear. He did not know whether any of them tried to give him an explanation. He would not listen. He could not permit this to be true. He kept stating in the tone of a feudal sovereign, "I'm the boss here from now on. I give the orders. I came to take over. I own this place. I am Dr. Robert Stadler, and if you don't know that name in this place, you have no business being here, you infernal idiots. You'll blow yourselves to pieces if that's the state of your knowledge. Have you had a high school course in physics? You don't look to me as if you've ever been allowed inside a high school, any of you. What are you doing here? Who are you?" It took him a long time to grasp, when his mind could not block it any longer, that somebody had beaten him to his plan. Somebody had held the same view of existence as his own, and had set out to achieve the same future. He grasped that these men, who called themselves the friends of the people, had seized possession of Project X tonight, a few hours ago, intending to establish a reign of their own. He laughed in their faces, with bitterly incredulous contempt. "You don't know what you're doing. You miserable juvenile delinquents, do you think that you, can handle a high-precision instrument of science? Who is your leader? I demand to see your leader." It was his tone of overbearing authority, his contempt, and their own panic, the blind panic of men of unbridled violence who have no standards of safety or danger, that made them waver and wonder whether he was, perhaps, some secret top-level member of their leadership. They were equally ready to defy or obey any authority. After being shunted from one jittery commander to another, he found himself at last being led down iron stairways and down long, echoing underground corridors of reinforced concrete to an audience with the boss in person. The boss had taken refuge in the underground control room. Among the complex spirals of the delicate scientific machinery that produced the sound ray, against the wall panel of glittering levers, dials, and gauges known as the xylophone, Robert Stadler faced the new ruler of Project X. It was Cuffy Meggs. He wore a tight, semi-military tunic and leather leggings. The flesh of his neck bulged over the edge of his collar. His black curls were matted with sweat. He was pacing restlessly, unsteadily in front of the xylophone, shouting orders to men who kept rushing in and out of the room. "Send couriers to every county seat within our reach. Tell them that the Friends of the People have won. Tell them they're not to take orders from Washington any longer. The new capital of the People's Commonwealth is Harmony City, henceforth to be known as Meggsville. Tell them that I'll expect $500,000 per every 5,000 heads of population by tomorrow morning, or else." It took some time before Cuffy Meggs' attention and bleary brown eyes could be drawn to focus on the person of Dr. Stadler. "Well, what is it? What is it?" he snapped. "I'm Dr. Robert Stadler." "Huh? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're the big guy from outer spaces, aren't you? You're the fellow who catches atoms or something? Well, what on earth are you doing here? It is I who should ask you that question. Huh? Look, Professor, I'm in no mood for jokes. I've come here to take control." "Control? Of what? Of this equipment? Of this place, of the countryside within its radius of operation?" Meg stared at him blankly for a moment, then asked softly, "How did you get here?" "By car." "I mean, whom did you bring with you?"
"Nobody."
"What weapons did you bring?"
"None. My name is sufficient."
"You came here alone with your name and your car?"
"I did."
Cuffy Meggs burst out laughing in his face. "Do you think," asked Dr. Stadler, "that you can operate an installation of this kind? Run along, Professor, run along, beat it before I have you shot. We've got no use for intellectuals around here."
"How much do you know about this?"
Dr. Stadler pointed at the xylophone. "Who cares? Technicians are a dime a dozen these days. Beat it. This ain't Washington. I'm through with those impractical dreamers in Washington. They won't get anywhere bargaining with that radio ghost and making speeches. Action, that's what's needed. Direct action. Beat it, Doc, your day is over." He was weaving unsteadily back and forth, catching at a lever of the xylophone once in a while. Dr. Stadler realized that Meggs was drunk.
"Don't touch those levers, you fool!"
Meggs jerked his hand back involuntarily, then waved it defiantly at the panel.
"I'll touch anything I please. Don't you tell me what to do."
"Get away from that panel. Get out of here. This is mine. Do you understand? It's my property."
"Property? Huh."
Meggs gave a brief bark that was a chuckle. "I invented it.
I created it. I made it possible.
You did? Well, many thanks, Doc, many thanks, but we don't need you any longer. We've got our own mechanics.
Have you any idea what I had to know in order to make it possible?
You couldn't think of a single tube of it, not a single bolt.
Meggs shrugged.
Maybe not.
Then how dare you think that you can own it? How dare you come here? What claim do you have to it?
Meggs patted his holster.
This?
Listen, you drunken lout, cried Dr. Stadler. Do you know what you're playing with?
Don't you talk to me like that, you old fool. Who are you to talk to me like that? I can break your neck with my bare hands. Don't you know who I am?
You're a scared thug way out of his depth.
Oh, I am I? I'm the boss. I'm the boss, and I'm not going to be stopped by an old scarecrow like you. Get out of here.
They stood staring at each other for a moment by the panel of the xylophone, both cornered by terror. The unadmitted root of Dr. Stadler's terror was his frantic struggle not to acknowledge that he was looking at his final product, that this was his spiritual son. Cuffy Meggs's terror had wider roots. It embraced all of existence. He had lived in chronic terror all his life, but now he was struggling not to acknowledge what it was that he had dreaded. In the moment of his triumph, when he expected to be safe, that mysterious, occult breed, the intellectual, was refusing to fear him and defying his power.
Get out of here, snarled Cuffy Meggs. I'll call my men. I'll have you shot.
Get out of here, you lousy, brainless, swaggering moron, snarled Dr. Stadler.
Do you think I'll let you cash in on my life? Do you think it's for you that I sold?
He did not finish.
Stop touching those levers, goddamn you. Don't you give me orders. I don't need you to tell me what to do. You're not going to scare me with your classy mumbo-jumbo. I'll do as I please. What did I fight for if I can't do as I please?
He chuckled and reached for a lever.
Hey, Cuffy, take it easy,
yelled some figure in the back of the room, darting forward.
Stand back, roared Cuffy Meggs. Stand back, all of you. Scared, am I? I'll show you who's boss.
Dr. Stadler leaped to stop him, but Meggs shoved him aside with one arm, gave a gulp of laughter at the sight of Stadler falling to the floor, and with the other arm yanked a lever of the xylophone. The crash of sound, the screeching crash of ripped metal and of pressures colliding on conflicting circuits, the sound of a monster turning upon itself, was heard only inside the structure. No sound was heard outside. Outside, the structure merely rose into the air, suddenly and silently, cracked open into a few large pieces, shot some hissing streaks of blue light to the sky, and came down as a pile of rubble. Within the circle of a radius of 100 miles, enclosing parts of 4 states, telegraph poles fell like matchsticks, farmhouses collapsed into chips, city buildings went down as if slashed and minced by a single second's blow, with no time for a sound to be heard by the twisted bodies of the victims. And on the circle's periphery, halfway across the Mississippi, the engine and the first 6 cars of a passenger train flew as a shower of metal into the water of the river, along with the western spans of the Taggart Bridge, cut in half. On the site of what had once been Project X, nothing remained alive among the ruins, except, for some endless minutes longer, a huddle of torn flesh and screaming pain that had once been a great mine. There was a sense of weightless freedom, thought Dagny, in the feeling that a telephone booth was her only immediate absolute goal, with no concern for any of the goals of the passers-by in the streets around her. It did not make her feel estranged from the city. It made her feel, for the first time, that she owned the city and that she loved it, that she had never loved it before as she did in this moment, with so personal, solemn, and confident a sense of possession. The night was still and clear. She looked at the sky. As her feeling was more solemn than joyous, but held the sense of a future joy, so the air was more windless than warm, but held the hint of a distant spring.